Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
We are trudging through season two.
Ben, where are you today?
I'm still in LA. I've been, four episodes in a row that I've been in Los Angeles, but that's just because we're recording at quite a rapid clip.
Really?
I'm in a hotel on Wilshire Boulevard. I just had pancakes on the roof and came down to...
Is that a euphemism?
That's like a Riker sex move.
Yeah. Not many aliens have heard of pancakes on the roof.
Yeah.
But they'll never forget it.
Yeah, it's like similar to a bulldog in the bathtub kind of a thing.
Are you in LA doing personal business, business, or podcast business?
I'm here mostly on business, but I think in a bit I'm going to lunch that potentially has some podcast business related to it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Huh, well, maybe we'll follow up to that sometime.
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, that sounds outrageous. Ben.
Ooh, ooh.
See, that's a championship pivot into our episode there.
Yeah.
Season 2, episode 4.
That is a mission log level transition.
Oh, how dare you. We can do better than that then. We've lost half of our listeners to a coma.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
The Enterprise is passing through.
I didn't give you the number and the title of the episode.
Oh,
just
lay it on
me. Slow your roll, okay?
Okay, I apologize.
All right, what we've got on the pancake today is the season 2, episode 4, Outrageous O'Connor.
And the Enterprise is passing through the Coalition of Medina, I believe.
The funky Coalition Medina.
Yeah. I'm sorry you did that to yourself. speaking of a show of an episode that's all about learning to do jokes.
Is Medina that show with the really tall black comedian who dresses up in drag? Like what are those called?
I don't know, Adam. I feel like you're digging yourself a grave that I don't know where it is or how to lower a ladder to you.
We're editing all of this out. We are just there will be no open to this episode.
Yeah, I'll just come right in the middle. So the Enterprise is in some fucking sector. They're detecting a small cargo ship that is in some trouble, and they get on FaceTime, and the captain is just about as charming gets.
Yeah, you as a casting director, you go for someone who's a little like Johnny Depp, and you get like the guy in Times Square. Who is Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean.
This guy's actually like a great midpoint between Jonathan Frakes and Johnny Depp.
You know what is interesting about that comment? I don't know if you did this intentionally, but the actor who plays O'Connor was up for the role of Riker.
Yeah, I just missed it.
Yeah.
And I think he's had like a little bit of a TV acting career. Like he's been a recurring character on some stuff.
Do you know that the reason he didn't get the role was because he was called too soft?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. When you're going for Riker, you're going hard.
Rock hard.
All the way.
Yeah, diamond hard.
Like, not pancake soft. That's just a move. That's just a sex move.
Yeah.
For the roof.
But, like, everybody is fully under O'Connor's spell.
No joke is getting out of this show alive.
We have to cut all the humor from this humor episode.
We are murdering the humor here.
It's really like I think you know, like dissecting a frog. this episode is all about why jokes work, and I think it has fucked us up, Adam.
Okay, all right, center. All right, we're back to center. We're good. We can do this.
So O'Connor has some part of his ship that's broken, and Wesley's like, can we beam him on? We can fix that. We can fix it. And so they agree to beam him on and fix this part.
The way that they get there, like, you're talking about Wesley's involvement in this plan, and I think it's critical that we discuss that Riker asks Wesley to plot an intercept course, and the course that Wesley plots allows Akana's freighter to approach from the rear. Did you notice this?
I did notice that, but I didn't really make the connection for how Wesley views the world.
So to me, it felt to me like Wesley was like a hostage who gets brought into a gas station and he's like trying to signal to the attendant that he's been kidnapped. Like,
right.
In what world, in what universe is a intercept course allowing something to approach you from behind?
Hey man, I don't know how orbital mechanics work, but
so to me that felt like Wesley, like, come on guys, like, isn't this weird? Don't you see how weird this is? I'm trying to tell you what's happening to me.
trying to telegraph. I'm trying to write a note in the fog on the back window, and you are not paying attention.
I'm in the trunk unplugging the brake lights so someone will see that something's wrong with this car.
Yeah. I think the last thing that happens before O'Connor has beamed up is that they hear the transporter chief's voice on the radio, and he goes, "Is that a lady?" And Riker lights up like a Christmas tree. He is like, "I have found a kindred spirit. Finally, I've been traveling the galaxy for years now, and I've finally found somebody that I totally understand and that will totally understand me."
But not be a sexual threat to him in any way.
No.
Like, Riker gets first dibs.
O'Connor is batting a little bit below Riker's level. They're in different weight divisions. I will change metaphors midstream, but they're they fight in the same league.
O'Connor's a little softer.
Yeah, a little bit softer. But his first conquest is Terry Hatcher.
Not a bad first conquest.
Not at all. Not a bad conquest, period.
She is looking awesome.
Yeah, this is like a 19-year-old Terry Hatcher running the transporter room.
She evidently did not agree because she was so ashamed of her performance in this episode that she asked not to be credited.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that they gave O'Brien the day off, because it was nice to... she's very easy on the eyes in this ep.
How much stranger would this scene have been if it were Chief O'Brien that O'Connor falls for?
I feel like O'Brien is a pretty old-fashioned dude and would not have taken kindly to that.
God, give me all that haggis.
Yeah. That's what Irish people eat, right?
Sure.
So they're flying around.
No one's going to be listening by the end of this.
No. They're flying around, slowly fixing the piece of junk that O'Connor brought on board, while O'Connor avails himself of all of the non-commissioned female officers on the ship. I think at one point they say that he's fucked at least three of the Enterprise's crew. By the time anything else happens in this episode,
they pretty openly say that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they use the F word, but they might as well.
So the deal is, he's on board with his busted part, and the part's in engineering, and he's...
I'll tell you one part he has that's not busted.
Oh, this dick.
That dick.
So he's in engineering, and Geordi is working on the part. And they're shooting the shit. And one really terrifying part about this scene from a production standpoint, did you notice that they chose to dolly off of Wesley's butt?
I did see that.
What the fuck was that about?
The show is getting a lot more explicit as time goes on.
Yeah, they cut from, I don't know, they cut from a bridge scene to engineering, and they dolly through his ass.
That camera was on an intercept course.
Yeah. God, there's another pretty explicit cry for help.
O'Connor has been joking around with everybody, and Data is really curious about this. So he goes to the only professional comedian on board, Whoopi Goldberg, and tries to talk it out with her. And it's a real weird scene because he's real like glum about the fact that he doesn't understand humor, and she really kind of matches his affect. So it's sort of like they're talking about him having cancer, but they're talking about him not knowing how jokes go.
It's just you and I here. We're talking, we're having an intimate conversation. Why? Because you're a droid and I'm annoyed.
But why?
Because that's what I am.
Have I said something to offend you?
But it's a weird scene. She does some material on him that is very C-minus, like not, like almost not even a joke. She tries on him and he doesn't laugh. And she goes like, no, no, that was funny, Data. You should have laughed at that. Which, like, you can't do as a comedian.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if that's a Whoopi thing or a Guinan thing.
Like, I don't think we would expect anybody to laugh at this episode. But we have done episodes in the past that I personally think are funny. But right. I can't, like, dictate that to anybody else.
No, and in fact, I think that qualifies as anti-funny. That would, right. That would compel me not to find something to laugh about at all.
Right.
Don't and tell I me what to do. Don't tell yeah. me how to live my life.
Right. And I think, unfortunately, we're doing a lot of work to undo any humor that we've done in past episodes on this show. So that's troubling.
Yeah, well. So Guinan's like, I don't know whose idea it is, but they're like, let's go to the holodeck and practice some comedy.
Yeah, I think Data goes by himself at first, and there's like a classic 1980s mulleted comedian as portrayed by Joe Piscopo, and he's like in a tuxedo in like a cheesy nightclub.
Mr. Comic, I wish to know what is funny.
It's funny, I don't know. It's a matter of opinion, I guess. Tip O'Neill in a dress. Some people say words that end with a K are funny. A briefcase that looks like a fish. Personally, I find that hysterical.
Data essentially puts him on fast mode to discuss material. And it's unclear, you know, like he's doing exactly what Pulaski admonished him to not to do in the last episode, which is learn everything by rote. He's just having Joe Piscopo do his material at like 10x speed, and Data's absorbing it with his super android brain.
You think, but Whoopi Goldberg is a little bit insulted that they cast for this part at all? Like, I feel like Whoopi Goldberg is in the production meeting and they're like, okay, well, we got to find a real stand up to be in this scene, and Whoopi's yeah. like,
Well, and it's especially strange because this is when Whoopi was really at the height of her powers.
Like, yeah, yeah.
She was so famous that she said, I want to be on that Star Trek show because I loved Nichelle Nichols when I was growing up. And they had to say yes. Like, there wasn't any, like, I mean, they were also, I'm sure, leaping at the opportunity to have one of the most famous people in the country become a recurring character on their show. But
yeah, she was going from like the set of Sister Act 3 to the Next Generation and back and forth.
Like, if she had been lukewarm on Star Trek growing up and they had asked her, they wouldn't have had a hope in hell that she would have said yes to this.
No. No, yeah, and it's true. She's like the biggest star on the entire show.
Absolutely.
So Data is sort of absorbing stand-up comedy in fast forward.
And you know, he comes out of the holodeck and does like arm waving comedy routine on Guinan, and she does not give him any benefit of the doubt. she just side eyes him the entire time.
Yeah, it's really anti funny. He's got a giant like foot long cigar.
Yeah,
it's real cheesy.
So as this is transpiring, they really like make this the A storyline when it really shouldn't be. like they cut away from Okada for like most of the middle of this episode. He's like nothing is really happening with that storyline because we have to spend so much time in the holodeck with Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but as I was watching, I was like, please cut back to Okada. Like, I would do anything to just watch him flirt with random Enterprise crew members for like 15 minutes instead of this.
And then show like Worf reacting to it, you know?
Right.
Because when Worf goes into the computer and sees that O'Connor's been in a bunch of people's quarters, he is fucking pissed.
Why?
I feel like Riker has probably been like, listen, you and me got a good thing going. You keep watch over these ladies.
Stay away from deck 13, all right? I have had all of them. I will continue to have all of them.
Yeah.
Keep your dick off deck 13.
That puss is not yours to crush. That's not my wording. That's Riker's wording.
Right. And with that, we've lost another entire block of listeners.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Outside the Enterprise, a bunch of crappy little ships with lasers on them are showing up, and it is people from the two planets that kind of control this sector. It's a dude and his pregnant daughter on one ship, and a dude and his sniveling bitch of a son on the other ship, and they've got a real Capulet Montague type family feud going, and they both want O'Connor's head because the guy with the pregnant daughter says that O'Connor knocked her up and then split and didn't, you know, do the honorable thing and marry her. And the guy with the sniveling son says that the son was like roped into a scheme where O'Connor was hijacking the family jewels and making off with them. O'Connor is called up to the bridge, and Captain Picard does like angry school headmaster move with him.
Mr. O'Connor, you were welcomed aboard without any undue investigation. In turn, it was assumed that you did not come under false pretenses. It now seems that you may have done.
And O'Connor's like, dude, no. Like, I'm cool, man.
Look at this ponytail. Look at this rockin' tail.
Look at my scraggly beard.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a half big dog out of Picard, which is nice because he hasn't gotten to big dog someone in quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of big dogging I would get from my school headmaster when I would claim to be ill to get out of taking an exam when I was in like 7th grade. You know, where I'd be like, oh, it seems like a really unfortunate timing, Ben. kind of a deal.
Or should I say Wesley?
I don't think he ever knew me as Wesley, but yeah. He might as well have.
Very few people did.
Yeah. That was a certain isolated group in my life.
You definitely get visually the whole Montague Capulet thing because the people on one ship it's very brightly colored. They're wearing flowing costumes. And the other ship is basically the S&M ship. They're all leathered up. It's all dark and red. Now, these are clearly people from two different worlds, and we're meant to understand that pretty explicitly.
Yeah. So not really knowing like who to believe in all this, and because both factions would like their claim on O'Connor's head to supersede the other one, Picard is put in this awkward situation. And to his credit, O'Connor's like, listen, like, you don't have to repair my ship. Like, just, I'll get out of here. You don't have to worry yourself. It's not your problem. And Picard's like, yeah, you're kind of right. It isn't my problem, but you're fucked if you leave, because while neither of these ships is any threat to the Enterprise, your ship is a piece of shit and they can both outrun you and outgun you.
Yeah, the Enterprise could destroy both of these ships just by jettisoning its garbage at them, and like the rate of speed that the garbage would close in on either one of these ships would destroy them easily.
There's like a group chat situation going on the screen for a while, and it's a lot of like, put it on mute because I can't stand these idiots. And yet Picard offers to moderate the dispute and beams everybody over to a conference room, and they try and hash it out. And
it's so much easier to set up a conference call in the future.
Yeah.
Real nice.
You don't have to give the conference bridge and the PIN code out. It's very smoothed out. This dispute winds up being kind of a canard. The reason O'Connor...
Indeed.
The reason O'Connor has this jewel is because he was taking it from sniveling dude to pregnant lady, because in fact sniveling dude was behind the lady getting pregnant.
Oh boy, was he.
And they, you know, this is a conflict that they don't, you know, their family conflict is not something they share with their fathers. So they got jiggy with it, and she got pregnant, and eventually the sniveling dude is talked into proposing marriage to her. And Okana, it turns out, was just being like a cool wingman and go-between for this whole situation.
Yeah, he's totally innocent except for the handful of Enterprise crew women that he banged.
Yeah. 9 months after this episode is going to be an interesting day on the Enterprise. Wow, suddenly 3 infants running around.
And they all have ponytails.
That's how biology works.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Let's go back to the A storyline, which is Data and Guinan in the comedy club trying to work out some material, and it just doesn't work. And eventually Guinan talks Data out of making this a make or break part of his quest to become more human, because not everybody's funny, and maybe Data doesn't have to be. We are living testaments to that with this episode, Adam.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that they get to this conclusion is Data's up on stage and he's doing his version of a comedy set, and everyone's laughing. Everyone, right. there's a Les Moonves CBS sitcom amount of laughter.
Yeah.
That he immediately reads as fake, just like everyone else who watches a CBS comedy knows.
Yeah, and you know, Geordi wasn't there to program the computer to make an audience that even Data couldn't make laugh.
Yeah, so the laughs are cheap, and he finds less and less satisfaction with his set as he goes through it until he finally just kills the program.
Right, he starts saying phrases that don't have punchlines, and they keep laughing, so it's a little bit of a heartbreaker, because you can see how crestfallen he is. He thought he'd figured it out, and he really hadn't.
Right. So he kills the program. He's all sad.
Yeah.
He walks off stage alone. Kind of a bummer ending.
But he goes back to the bridge and does some material that actually works. People actually laugh. And it's unfortunate because he wasn't trying to make a joke. It's like, you know, all my best material is totally unintentional. And then I retroactively go, yeah, that's a pun I meant to make, and not just I was misspeaking and being an idiot.
Sure.
And,
sure. Yeah,
because
I think what we know about Data is that he's witty, like unintentionally witty.
Yeah.
He kind of wanders into a punchline and falls into it.
Yeah. Then he does try to make a joke, and everybody's like, that's not funny. But I thought it was really funny when he says,
take my wharf, please.
Yeah, that was good.
I thought that was great.
Worf is not amused by this.
No.
We're ready to get underway, sir.
He's been made fun of enough.
Yeah.
What did you think of this episode, Ben?
I think that it's almost a good episode, and the amount of charisma that Okana is bringing to the table is so like devastating that I almost feel like I bet they wished they could have rewritten and restructured this episode a little bit once they saw like what he came and did on set.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
like he should have been on screen for like 75% of the episode, and he was on screen for like 20% of the ep.
Yeah, I don't feel like this statement has been said very often, but this wasn't Joe Piscopo's fault. They overwrote that B story and underwrote the A story. It should have been reversed.
Yeah.
It should have been all about Okana.
It should have absolutely been all about Okana. And I love to picture a world in which that guy got Jonathan Frakes' part, not to take anything away from Jonathan Frakes, because I think he's a great Riker, but that guy clearly, this actor clearly had an axe to grind when he came on for this feature role. Like, he's like, look at me, look at what I can do. And he's great. He's so fun to watch.
It's never been more clear that a minor character could be Riker's drinking buddy and carousing buddy.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to imagine an offshoot bottle episode where it's just Okana, Riker, and that guy on the lady planet from season one. Like, they go back and visit the planet of strong women.
Yeah.
And they just spend a week there just camping and fucking and doing the whole thing.
Well, you know, I read that they're working, this new Star Trek series that they're working on is going to be an anthology series, so each season will be its own storyline. Maybe it's not too late to hope for that.
I'd like to withdraw all of my Les Moonves criticism in an effort to maybe one day get a writing job on that show.
That would be tremendous.
So let's just retroactively take out all of those negative comments, if possible.
I'm not going to edit it out, but I hope the listeners edit it out in their heads.
I hope the Star Trek series doesn't have a laugh track. That'd be,
well, maybe one season does, you know?
I feel like this episode suffered from the Studio 60 problem, which is like a series or an episode talking about comedy without the ability to be truly funny.
It fails where the Larry Sanders Show succeeds.
Yes. Yes. And I think the reason that a show like Larry Sanders does succeed is because there's actual true comedic pedigree.
Right.
Like
it's the people that are writing the drama about what it is like to be funny know whereof they speak.
Right, and it's easier for comics to write about drama than it is for dramaticists to write about comedy. Like, it just doesn't work that way. I just wonder if Whoopi could have helped this episode in any way, like writing-wise.
Yeah.
Because she's got to watch this comedy holocaust happen around her and be like, oh my God, like, are we really talking about this? Are we really talking about the thing that I do professionally like this?
Yeah,
I would really want to know what her feelings are. Like, I would listen to a Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh yeah, if she like went on commentary. Mark Maron to.
Well, no, I mean, like, I would listen to a Whoopi commentary.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that would be great.
Alongside, just to figure out what was going on behind the scenes of this. Like,
I don't have the DVDs of this, but I hope that's on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I did not like this episode. I didn't think O'Connor could save it. As fun as O'Connor was, he wasn't enough for me. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I would put this up on the Mount Rushmore of bad episodes.
Wow. Bold.
Should we call that the Mount Armus? I think I might.
Do we know if this producer that has a credit in the pre-roll, whose last name is Armus, has anything to do with why they decided to name that character Armus?
I saw that too.
Like Burton, Bruce Armus or something?
Burton Armus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made me wonder, like...
do they all hate this guy?
Were they sending him a message or was he sending them a message?
Unclear.
He is all that is evil. Hmm.
Dank and vile.
You got to hit this. This is dank and vile. did you find a drunk Shimoda in this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda.
I would be curious to hear who your drunk Shimoda is.
First, you want to give me ups on drunk Shimoda?
Yeah.
Oh God. I had a really hard time finding one in this episode. I think it's Data for me. Like, he's just the try hard. he's trying too hard. Where Shimoda himself was effectively funny in his try-hardness, Data was just not. And he was actually sort of a tragic figure in my mind throughout the episode. You weren't even laughing at him. You just weren't laughing at all.
Yeah, it was a rough one.
Yeah. So I think he'd be mine.
I think my drunk Shimoda is the group therapy scene when they're all the like factions in this dispute are in a room discussing everything with each other.
A scene Shimoda. I like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I think there's like 6 or 7 speaking parts in this scene and it's just really ham-fistedly blocked. It's badly paced. It's poorly dialogued. And just that whole scene, I just felt like, I was like, wow, like for all of the things that are not quite working in this episode, this is like this is like something you attempt in a student film and realize that you are not the filmmaking equal of the thing you set out to do.
It's like that scene in every school play where there's an argument among six people and they argue louder and louder and louder, and then the lights go out and then a spotlight turns on to a single character, and they're like, my parents will never get along.
Yeah. It was a rough one.
I was really distracted by the father of the bride looking so much like Michael Gross from Family Ties. I had to look it up. It wasn't him, but God, just a dead ringer.
Well,
that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, let's move on.
What do we have coming up next time on season two?
Season 2, Episode 5 is called Loud as a Whisper. The future of a warring planet depends on a deaf moderator who suddenly loses his ability to communicate. Do you remember this one, Adam?
Isn't deafness cured in the future? This comes as a surprise to me.
I think that this guy is like congenitally deaf, though. He doesn't even have the apparatus to hear.
So there's something wrong with his genitals?
Wow, we are really keeping up the pace of the just sickly awful jokes in this episode.
Tell you whose genitals aren't deaf, Commander Riker.
Yeah. This is an episode that they played in my wife's law school in her alternative dispute resolution class.
Oh my God, they studied this?
Yep. I think this is the only Star Trek The Next Generation that my wife has ever seen, and it was just like one scene from this episode.
Is she going to listen to our show about it?
Probably not.
Are they
going
to play our episode in law school?
She has not listened to a single episode of this podcast.
You know what would really get her in good with her old alumni is sending the recording of our show about this episode back to her school.
Yeah, that's as good as a donation right there.
Right. Yeah, you don't need my money. Take my terrible comedy, please.
would you invoke a veto on this one?
No, for the same reason that I didn't invoke a veto on the episode we reviewed just now. Like, if I can't remember anything at all about it, I'm curious enough to see it.
Okay, well, I will not veto either, so that will be our next episode.
Wow, well, something to look forward to there. A lot of sign language. Sounds great.
Yep.
If you ever want to give us any feedback about how terrible we're doing on on this or any other episode, you can find us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm also at CutForTime. Ben is at BenjaminAHR.
We should thank Dark Materia for our music, which we really enjoy having play at the beginning and end and all through the middle of our show.
I think we can agree it's the only good thing about our show.
Especially this episode, Adam. Especially this episode. Well, I think that's about all we have to say, so we'll be back at you next time with a great episode of The Next Generation and hopefully a better episode of The Greatest Generation.
I'm really sorry about this one.
Yeah, sorry guys.
Sorry.
Our listeners probably wish they could have vetoed this from their queue.
A listener can veto any episode.
That's true. Nobody's holding a phaser to your head.
No. No.
All right, Adam. I think we've done enough harm here.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.